arrivare. If you can feel connected just by having your one bite of your meal, a piece of bread, if you can feel connected with everyone, all 14 people in the family. We are talking about the importance of food in our life as a human being. We can go to many meditation retreats, but if we don't know how to eat properly, mindfully, in a way that doesn't harm us and that doesn't harm other people, if we don't know how to do this, your meditation retreats haven't taught you much. So eating is that important. When we talk about eating, usually we talk about satisfying our body. We don't think much about environment. You buy something, plastic, you know, it's packed with plastic. You eat what is inside, a cake, bread, anything, biscuit. What are you going to do with the plastic? You're going to throw it in your dustbin. Very nice, very tidy. Singapore is very clean. But that's not the end of it. The life of that abandoned plastic, that's not the end of it. The rubbish collectors, the municipal, they have to arrange to come and collect it from your house. You don't know how to dispose it. Even if you know you don't have time. But it's not just one day. Then where the municipal, okay, is going to dispose the plastic? We're just talking about one piece of plastic. If you're going to bury it, okay, in the land, in the soil, under the earth cannot digest plastic. The earth can digest plants. Those days, we pack, okay, with leaves, and we throw away the leaves, and it recycle, natural recycle. Now we are so modern, we like to use plastic. And if you can have some mindfulness, how many pieces of plastic I throw away today? Because what you throw away is going to affect other people. In Yangon, in Tamwe, you can see a huge heap of, you know, refuge. But I think those days, the plastic formed just maybe less than half of it. But from today, from now on, the plastic is going to form the majority of what we throw away. So think about the Mother Earth. The Mother Earth, we are like naughty children. We call Mother Earth. We are like naughty children. We don't actually look after the earth. We don't know. Most of us, we don't know. We destroy the trees. A lot of logging. And when you don't have trees, the earth, you know, doesn't get enough drink. When you have rain, the rain will flow to the lower ground because it's the roots of the trees, okay, that help the earth to drink water. to hydrate itself. And this is one thing. Another thing is when we grow food on the soil, the Mother Earth has to give a lot of its energy so that our plant, our food can grow strong. You call this fertilizer, natural fertilizer. You imagine, okay, one woman, one mother giving a birth to a child. You need time to recover. In the same way, the Mother Earth needs time to recover. But if you don't look after the Mother Earth, the Earth may not recover. Worse, if you put a lot of chemical, okay, on the soil, you're going to destroy the soil very soon. So this, when we talk about food, we have to have consideration for the earth. We have to have consideration for the farmers. Professor Gordon Conway from Imperial College, University of London, an expert on food, and chief scientific advisor to the government of the United Kingdom. He said in one of his lectures that there are around 500 million people engaging in agriculture. Out of 7 billion, there's one in 14. So one person feeds 14 people. And this is the situation that we have at the moment in the world. Hey, deep and slow breathing. Breathing in and out. The body is tired. The muscles are tense from hard work for the whole week, for the whole month, perhaps. And don't fight with tiredness. This body requires some food. Some of the food that the body requires is solid food. Some of the food is mental food, psychological food. Even the body requires psychological food. So breathe in and out slowly, gently, with compassion for the body. You're eating also through your nose. And the third cooking is happening through your mouth. When you put the food into your mouth and you start chewing. As you start chewing and chewing a few times, the size, the color, the texture, the shape of the food is now changed. Everything is changed. You're trying to present your food, okay, to the best of your ability on the table. But now all of that is destroyed and changed within a minute. As soon as you put into your mouth. But now, at the third stage, you go for the taste. Sweet, sour, and so on. And very soon you're going to swallow, and the food will go down into the tummy. The further down the food goes, inch by inch, the food becomes disgusting, more and more disgusting. If for some reason you have to vomit or you have to spit out the food from your mouth, you never want to see the color again. You never want to smell it again. You never want to put it into your mouth and taste it again. If the food has gone down into the body, and if you vomit it, that's even worse. As a human being, we are blessed with languages. We have the ability to use language. And we use language to create more and more concepts around the food. Now the food, that should have been in our stomach, that should be nourishing us. For some reason, we vomit it out. We vomit and now it's outside. You think it's disgusting. This is the concept only unique to human beings. Animals, they don't have this concept. So they don't really mind, and they don't have the concept of what we call disgusting. They don't have that. But as a human being, we have this, and we suffer from this. So I want you to reflect on this, to meditate on this process of food, process of eating, process of preparation of the food, eating it, chewing it, and digesting it. The final stage of cooking is called digesting. The tummy has to digest it. The body uses up a lot of energy to digest one meal. The body uses up the energy from all parts of the body to digest it. So you feel a little bit exhausted after the meal. So now we're going to spend about 5 minutes time meditating on this. From the time you start imagining a menu to doing the shopping, to the actual cooking in the kitchen and eating and digesting the food. Winly, twedly. We need to produce more foods, more varieties. And to do that, we have to grow. But the earth, the mother earth, is given no time to recover. Okay? Because there is very short time, very short gap, very small gap between crops, the first and the next crop. So what happens is that we have to use chemical fertilizer. When we use chemical fertilizer, we destroy the earth. I don't need to talk about this because organic eating, organic farming is now very popular. It's a very good education. But we are back to square one. We have been totally organic before, 40, 50 years ago. Now we have gone more modern, we use a lot of chemicals, and now we go back to square one, back to organic farming, and it's very expensive. Very expensive. But the earth cannot afford this. If you need to do more farming, you need to cut more trees. If you cut more trees, the earth cannot drink enough water. It cannot, you know, drink sufficient water, because when the rain comes, the water will flow to the lower ground immediately, because there are no trees to suck the water into the soil. If the water itself is not well, no, if the earth itself is not well fed, not well looked after, you cannot expect the earth to look after human being as it used to do. Because we, as a human being, as a community, we have not been that responsible. We are driven by selfishness, by greed, and we eat just to satisfy our greed, just to satisfy our boredom, just to suppress our boredom, which is not the right attitude for eating, and it's not mindful eating. So the Buddha says we have to eat mindfully. When we eat, if the mind is complaining, we need to be mindful of that. We need to observe that complaining mind. In Europe, I repeat this every time, but this is the first time I'm talking about this in Singapore. I'm talking about my monastery, my training in a monastery in Baku, a city about 50 miles from Yangon. Dadana Mandai Pali University Monastery is where I lived for 5 years, studying and then teaching. For breakfast, okay, we have the same menu. We have rice, and we have red bean. We have soup, the vegetable soup. Usually, at that time in Baku, you can easily get in watercress. Some people call this ganku. You know, you can get this, and so we have plenty of that. We have that. The first few days, when you come to this monastery, you sort of get excited, because you have not. Not everywhere you get this red bean. But after a few days, then you start thinking, if tomorrow you're going to have the same menu again, the same red bean again. In Europe, you know, kids, they hate, baked bean. Baked bean and bread, okay? So breakfast, they hate baked bean. Baked bean hasn't changed. The kids, they need that for their growth, for their body. But the mind is toxic with boredom, with restlessness. So the mind is not acceptant, it's not receptive to baked bean anymore. Although baked bean is not toxic, the mind is already toxic. So we have to, all the students have had to face this reality of the same menu. For me, 5 years. For some people, it could be, you know, living in hell, having to repeat the same menu 5 years. But if you work on your mind, if you work on the complaining mind, if you work on the mind that feels bored because you have to repeat the same menu, if you work on that, and if the mind no longer complains, then you will enjoy even though is the same menu every day. If you can enjoy the same red bean every day, you can enjoy every food. Meaning, you have more ability to enjoy food. If your mind starts rejecting red bean, now it's red bean. Next it will be baked bean. Next it will be butter bean. Next it will be something else. The mind will not stop at rejecting things because it has become toxic already. That is why mindful eating is at the heart of Buddhist meditation practice, at the heart of Buddhist way of life, at the heart of Buddhist practice. And we have to eat mindfully, and you should chew as many times as you can, at least about 25 times, one bite. When you have to do that, because you're not used to doing it, the mind will get bored. So you have the opportunity of observing boredom. You have the opportunity of observing toxic mind, and you have the opportunity to deal with that there and then. Otherwise, you're going to keep feeding this toxic mind. So if you observe that boredom, you deal with that boredom, if you can bring that boredom under control, then you're going to appreciate your red bean, your baked bean, your butter bean very much. In Burmese, we say mayonaino. How do we say it in English? You will never fed up with that. You won't feel down with that. So, if you are able to be at peace with the same thing, with the same red bean, this is an enormous quality. It's a real blessing. Because in life, you cannot keep changing like you keep changing the menu. You can't keep changing your partner, your spouse, your school, your car. Everything is very expensive. Everything is very costly. So boredom is very toxic psychologically. And you can defeat this through mindful eating. If you have to grow less because your mind demands less, you only have to satisfy the needs and the requirements of the body, then what we have in the world is enough for the whole humanity. Otherwise, nothing is enough. In Burmese, we have a saying, the Modaya Wandatwa. We used to believe that the ocean is not measurable, cannot be measured. In the same way, our tummy, okay, is just as immeasurable just as the ocean. In terms of mathematical length, it's only this much. But if you're going to measure that through greed, it's immeasurable. That is why we have to eat with wisdom. We have to eat for wisdom. To eat with wisdom means to know why we eat. And when we're eating, to know what's going on with the mind, and to look for necessary vitamins, ions, fibers, calories, instead of, satisfying our mind. The Buddha also say, not to use the food to boost our ego. By using food as an instrument for competition, or to a kind of create status, social status. Some people, they think, okay, we go to this restaurant, it's very expensive, meaning you have status. And those people, they go and eat, you know, by the road, it's kind of not standard restaurant. So, you see, you go and have a meal, you spend your money, but not with the right attitude. When you don't have the right attitude, the restaurants, they are going to cater to your wrong attitude. Because this is what business is about. But if you have the right attitude, they can cater to your right attitude as well. Okay. So, eating is such an important activity that we do. We can stop study, or we can live our life without anything, without going to school, or just half. We can stop at half of the journey, with our study. Even spouse, you know, you can leave your spouse and live alone, but you will never be able to leave food. Food is very essential. Food is life. So knowing how to eat means knowing how to live. Knowing how to eat means knowing how to care. How to care about your body, how to care about your family, how to care about the environment. Because if your mind is bored easily, is restless easily, and you have to change your menu, you have to in order to satisfy your greed. If you need more and more food, we have to grow more and more food. But the world has its limit. We have limited resources that we need to share. We need to share. Out of greed, if we have to go for food, okay, one after another, and more varieties, we become uncaring towards the earth, towards the environment, towards the trees. In order to grow more, we need to cut trees. We need more farming lands. If we have less trees, the earth becomes dehydrated. The soil erosion happens at a quicker rate. That is why caring has to start from, you know, our meal, the meal that we eat at home. And we have to start teaching our children, the students, proper eating. An English family at Oxford, both parents meditate. The child is only 5 years old, a girl. When she eats, she doesn't talk. When she eats, she finishes what she puts on the plate. She eats mindfully. She hasn't learned how to read. No, she's just in the kindergarten. When her mom, you know, brought her to the monastery for the first time, I was really impressed. She hasn't done any meditation. Okay? I have done meditation since I was a novice, now more than 30 years. I feel, by looking at it, I feel I haven't done any meditation. That is why I think we need to talk about food. We need to talk about food, not to satisfy our greed, not to satisfy our ego, but to be a more caring person, caring towards humanity, towards society, towards the Mother Earth, and towards the next generation, who will have to make do with less resources than we have. So it makes no sense to talk about metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity without learning how to eat properly. It doesn't make sense to talk about nibbana without learning how to eat properly. So we need to eat. We need to learn how to eat properly. So when we eat, obviously, okay, if you have to chew the same bite many times, 25 times, 30 times, you're going to find boredom in your mind. That's a good opportunity to manage it. Don't run away from it, and don't get carried away by that boredom. To get carried away by that boredom is one extreme. That's to indulge in that. In Pali, we call this Kama Sukha Nika Niyoga. And to suppress this boredom is to torture yourself. It's the other extreme. So we have to follow the middle path in eating, which means we need to recognize our emotion at that time, which is boredom. We recognize that. If you feel bored eating cookie, you will hate cookie because you are bored with cookie. Cookie is very good, but you start hating cookie because you feel bored. You really like jelly. But now if you have jelly all the time, you start hating jelly. Hatred is poison. So, jelly hasn't changed, cookie hasn't changed, but you have changed. Your attitude has changed. Your reaction, your psychological reaction has changed. So what you have to fix is your psychological reaction, not cookie, not jelly, not the food. My own mother, throughout her life, I never noticed, I never observed, my sister told me, she took only about 5 or 6 kinds of dishes all her life. I never knew that. I took her to Bodh Gaya on pilgrimage. I brought her here to Singapore for a visit, to Thailand. And I noticed, you know, she didn't like tom yum in Thailand. And in India, she didn't like any spicy food. She was so used to that. I think that dislike element is something that she could work on. The positive thing is that, okay, she doesn't demand a lot of varieties. So she could be a self-sufficient person because her need wasn't that much. She lived up to 82 years. 82 years, and she went to the. She had been to the hospital for the first time 6 months before she died, when she was diagnosed with cirrhosis. Before that, she was so healthy she never had to go to hospital. Self-sufficient, simple way of life. In other words, she knew a lot better than me how to eat. And she had mindful eating. So I like to suggest that if you like to try mindful eating, if usually you have 3 dishes at home, trying to reduce 1 dish, if not every day, trying to do maybe 2 or 3 days a week, and during that time, you eat, okay, not just, you will become aware that you, how you are eating, many aspects of your eating, not just with your mouth, but also your mind. Okay? When you reduce the number of the dishes, then the mind will start complaining, meaning the mind is eating frustration, is eating anger, is eating dissatisfaction. But when you have three, you're happy. You're even happier when you have four, when you can afford to have four. Now you're eating the solid food through your mouth, you're also eating through your mind. Greed, you eat greed, loba. Okay? So we eat greed or frustration, dosa, anger all the time. That is why our body is very toxic. Our mind is very toxic. And meditation that the Buddha teaches is detoxication. You know, you can detox yourself. And in order to do this, you can use mindful eating as part of the practice. You eat, when you eat, try to chew as many times as what, about 20 times, 25 times. When you're bored, tell yourself, oh, this is boredom. Don't say, I am bored. Don't put I. Boredom is not you. Boredom is not me. Boredom is not Tom. Boredom is not John. It's not Sarah. It's not Lucy. Boredom is not, boredom is the universal property. And anybody can suffer from that. So if you look at that way, you're going to use a third person description. This is, I is the first person, you is second person. This is the third person description. This is boredom. This is frustration. This is complaining mind. You look at the complaining mind as if you are watching a show as a spectator. So you register that boredom, that complaining mind, once or twice, and you continue eating. If you keep doing this, I suppose for some people, within a few weeks, you will have reduced boredom to a large extent. At least you will not feed your boredom anymore. You will not encourage boredom anymore. If that happens, there is only one thing. That is, you will enjoy your food more. Even if you have to repeat the same thing. And you'd have to go extra length to satisfy your boredom. Now, we are talking about solid food, which has psychological aspect. And this psychological aspect is, I've already explained at length, is one of those aspects. Now, the second thing I'd like to talk about is about the way the human mind-body works is, in biology terms, we have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, the five physical senses, and then the mind. When the eyes and the visual object, they come into contact, then the mind processes that information, and the mind comes to know something. That knowing is called consciousness in Buddhism. This is how we understand the work of the mind. Buddhism has been studying mind for 2,600 years. So, Buddhism does have something to say about the mind. On the 30th July, at King's College at London University, we had Abhidhamma Conference, International Conference. One professor from Bristol University, a Buddhist and Abhidhamma scholar, he said, the Buddhists are the only, particularly he said, the Abhidhamma scholar are the only people who have been studying the mind for the longest time and with more dedication. For 2,600 years, we have been studying about the mind, trying to understand the mind, how the mind is affected by the environment and how the mind dictates it back. So through one meal, through 2 meals, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, if you understand and how your mind works more and more in relation to food, you will be eating mindfully. And you will be also living mindfully. Because to satisfy the requirement of the body is not very complicated. But to satisfy the mind, especially the greedy mind, the selfish mind, is just impossible. You work and work. When you have food on the table, when you start eating it, very soon you get bored. The body doesn't get bored. It's the mind which gets bored. If you get bored with this food, you have to find new type of food. And you get bored with that again, and you have to find another one, another one, another one. So we are using up more resources than we can afford as a humanity, as a country, as a society. That is why mindful eating is a big mission to save the world, to save the environment, about caring, right? Caring about the world, the environment. It has psychological aspect there, environmental aspect, environmental concern there, about social issue there, you know. Everything is in there. So the contact that arises there, that we call contact point between the eyes and the visual object, the ears and the the sound. A sound, if we like, we say it's a sound or it's a music. If we don't like it, even if it's a music, we say it's a noise. We have all sorts of concepts. And the ability to use language to describe our concepts, our boredom, our frustration as a human being. The Buddha says we can do a lot better than this. Not abusing our language ability to destroy the world, but to use it to promote happiness, not just of our generation, but for the generations to come. So to be mindful of what kind of food, okay, is being fed, being eaten, being consumed when the eyes and the visual object come into contact, the ears and the sound, the nose and the smell, the tongue and the taste, the body and the touch, the mind, the thought, the emotion, when they come into contact. That contact point is exactly the feeding point, the consuming point. So we are the consumer. We consume through our eyes, our ears, our nose, our tongue, our body, and our mind. We consume all the time. It's okay, but we should consume mindfully so that we don't destroy ourselves, so that we don't become self-destructive. The second food, second type of food is the contact point between the internal and external world, in other words. The third kind of point, the kind of food is intention. Why we buy a certain thing when we buy. Why we eat certain food when we eat. Why we go to a certain place when we go. why we say certain things when we do. There's intention everywhere. And that intention, if it's impure, if it's governed by greed, hatred, jealousy, fear, arrogance, selfishness, and this intention is poisonous, it's toxic. And we cannot get away from the consequences of this toxic food. Once you have eaten toxic food, you have to suffer, okay, from that physically. Just like that, once your mind, your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, your body, your mind have consumed toxic food, you will have indigestion. Some people have a lot of thought, they can't digest and they can't sleep. Some people, they cannot digest a certain unfortunate incident 20, 30 years ago. They still keep it in mind. It's still dominating. It's still bothering them. Indigestion. Emotional indigestion. If that happens, whatever you think, whatever you see, it can be toxic. So intention. But with pure intention, with good intention, whatever we eat, whatever we think, is nutritious. Nutritious emotionally, psychologically, mentally, is nutritious. The fourth kind of food is consciousness. This is a very important point. Because when the eyes and the visual object, when they come into contact, just them alone, two of them alone, we won't make sense of it. The mind has to come into play and get involved. And that mind is called consciousness. Consciousness that arises through the eye is called eye consciousness. Through the ear, ear consciousness. Nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. In Buddhist psychology, we analyze consciousness in this way. And this consciousness, just as the contact point can be poisonous, this mind can also be toxic. You know, if you eat, if you don't eat mindfully. That is why mindfulness is very important. And we don't talk enough about this issue. We don't think enough about this issue. We don't reflect enough this issue. That is why we suffer. We suffer from our own greed, our own boredom, our own restlessness. We serve and serve them. And we are being dictated, you know, by those negative emotions through our life. So seeing this, the Buddha became very compassionate towards human beings. He became very motivated to teach people mindful eating. He couldn't teach everyone, but if you become a monk, a Buddhist monk, the first thing you know is called Pissavakana Leba in Burmese. Four kinds of reflection. The first one is clothing. The second one is eating. The third one is shelter. The fourth one is medicine. The four essentials. We have to reflect on this every day. We have to learn how to wear. To wear with the right intention. If you don't wear with the, if you wear to impress people and you come here, you wear the best, your best clothes and you come here, no one takes notice of that, you are really disappointed. Because you don't wear with the right intention. The right intention for us is to protect ourselves, you know, from heat and cold, from temperature, extreme temperature. To cover ourselves, to protect ourselves from shame, to have some you know, to be able to live in a civil world with dignity. And this is the purpose of clothing. The purpose of eating is not to compete with each other, but to meet the requirement of this body so that this body is healthy, lives long, and can enjoy happiness for us and for other people in society. In Buddhist term, to achieve enlightenment. For the shelter is to protect ourselves from extreme temperatures as well, from the wind, from cold, from the heat, and from the animals, starting from insects. Medicine, this is also to take medicine in order to cure the illness that has already happened and to prevent new disease from coming. So this action is something that since the time we were novice, you know, we had to reflect on that every day. In Burmese we say iti sabwe ameme go myuye manjwa laba yezin phipyo chin ha ma thon ba bu le phya dat saung iko kaung di shi aung di le ye atat nya tan momo ban nya phaya tadana chin na phya go chin ba nai se vedana haung te ma phit se ya ya pai nya le ka tain phit ko You can easily find this if you know how to read Burmese, and you should examine word by word. This is about mindful eating. Not just mindful eating, it's also about mindful living. Any questions?